wanted to comment on that kind of amazing and profound second reading that we heard to the Philippians, the letter to the Philippians. In Paul's time, the city of Philippi was a major city in the Roman province of Macedonia. So this, we're talking, if you look on the map, northeastern Greece. And that city and kind of that region had changed hands through the centuries in terms of who was control. But it was about 30 years before the birth of Jesus that Caesar Augustus claimed it for as a Roman colony. And it would serve as kind of a retirement community for retired Roman soldiers. And it began to thrive in some ways. Gradually more Romans, citizens, they migrated there, taking over the surrounding farmlands, in fact, because it was apparently very good farmland. And it attracted even wealthy Roman farmers who saw it as an opportunity for great financial gain. That was about 30 years before the birth of Jesus that it was established and all that followed after that. It would be about 50 years after the birth of Jesus that Paul and his companions' existing culture to bring a new one. And this had me thinking about a book I read not very long ago, and it's written by a priest by the name of Father John Ricardo, who I think some of you are aware of him. And this book is called Rescued: The Unexpected and Extraordinary News of the Gospel. Now, in this book, Father Ricardo recounts his fascination with studying this map that he saw posted on a wall in Rome. And the map showed all the ways that it grew. This is on live stream, so everybody got to hear me say my verbs wrong. So it grew all the way until 117 AD, which maybe you could consider the high point of the Roman, the growth of the Roman Empire. Now, here's one of the things he pointed out in his book about Rome's beginnings. And this would be, of course, its beginnings way before any times of Caesars or an empire. What's interesting about it is there was really nothing fascinating at all about Rome where it began, Rome itself, its location, its climate, or its natural resources. And yet, this unlikely place, maybe you could call it a backwater village, eventually became the center of the Western world in many ways, and for a long span of history. So how did something so unlikely occur? Perhaps the easiest explanation was its military power. In other words, one thing you could say about the growth and the reason for it is it came through force and violence. So with that all in mind, Father Ricardo asks us to picture another map, one that shows the spread and growth of Christianity, what it looked like at its inception, maybe you could say at the Pentecost event, all the way to the end of the fourth century. Where did it start? Not Rome, Jerusalem. But like Rome, it was an unlikely place, unimpressive place. Yet it was from that very spot that the church began and quickly spread like wildfire. Now to understand why its spread was unlikely, as Father Ricardo suggests, consider that not long after it simply began, the Pentecost event, in fact, it would be the year 64 AD, that the Emperor Nero began the first wave of persecutions. These persecutions against Christians would continue off and on until the year 312. Christianity during that time was basically a forbidden religion, and yet it grew. Now, it begs the question, if it was illegal, and furthermore, if it likely resulted, or at least very potentially resulted in one's death, if they were discovered to be Christian. Why, maybe more to the point, how did it manage to grow? Because remember, it was not force or violence like Rome. Instead, it grew and it spread because the Christian believers were simply on fire with the truth within their hearts. This very man whom St. Paul in this second reading tells us, who emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, who in human likeness died on a cross, whom he further says would be the one before whom every knee would bend, those in heaven, on the earth, and under the earth. This Jesus Christ, who is Lord. Now, the Christians who had received this news were so enlivened with this belief that they wanted the whole world to know. And they themselves, not just their words, spread in every direction with this good news. As Father Ricardo cites, it's important to consider that before this time, there was no such thing as missionary work. Think about that. What we simply call the pagans, pagan people. They didn't travel to foreign lands to spread the news about Zeus or Apollo. They may have talked about their gods, but they didn't leave home with the intention of sharing that belief. So why did Christians take this risk? Father Ricardo asks. Well, some secular voices would say that it was simply an effort to expand national boundaries, to maybe even exploit the resources of lands to which they would come. Well, to be clear, sadly, in some cases this would occur, though it would not be for centuries and centuries and centuries, much later in history, later. Those motivations were not at all at work in the Christians of the first century, those who first were on fire with this news. Instead, the real reason they left their homelands and traveled to foreign and unfamiliar places, that they went to the trouble of learning new languages, that they ignored whatever causes for fear, was so that they could tell the world about the freedom, the liberation, the mercy, and the love that came through Jesus Christ, the man who conquered death. These first Christians wanted so badly to tell anyone and everyone that the problems of life, the problems of the world around us, well, they had been fixed. But while that message was powerful, what was most impactful was the radical way in which they lived. A stark contrast to the mentality and worldview of what was typical of those in the Roman Empire. They were altogether different. Father Ricardo says, in a world filled with despair, Christian life was hopeful, and it was joyful. It was marked by an intense revolutionary love that was evident in action. And that evidence manifest in their action was not just words. That evidence was vital for the growth of the church, the way in which people saw that they lived. And he suggests, in our day and age, once again, it is vital that people see us living differently. On this Respect Life Sunday, within this Respect Life month, with all its variety of issues that it asks us to consider, perhaps it's fair to say that we must be differentiated from the culture around us, just as the Christians were within the Roman Empire. I remind us of St. Paul's words of guidance to the Christians of Philippi, because I think they're guidance for us. Brothers and sisters, if there is any encouragement in Christ, any solace in love, any participation in the Spirit, any compassion and mercy, have the same love. Be united in heart. Do nothing out of selfishness or of vainglory. Rather, humbly regard others as more important than yourselves, each not looking out for his own interests, but instead also bearing in mind those of others. Have in you the same attitude that is in Christ Jesus.